Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin from Beyond the Uniform. My goal is to provide active duty military personnel with tools and resources to help them figure out how to make their civilian transition. I do that by interviewing veterans, talking about their careers, what they like, what they don't like, advice, things along those lines. This week, I'm speaking with Jay Border. I think this is a great resource for anyone who's trying to decide on what sort of grad school program to pursue, trying to choose whether to do that on active duty or afterwards, trying to decide whether to do a full-time program versus an executive program. Jay's got some great perspectives on that. Also, anyone who's in the early stages of a job search, I really like how Jay lays out the process of how to network, how to find advisors and mentors, how to borrow from their experience to accelerate your own process. So show notes are on beyondtheuniform.io. I try to detail out the different time points on the podcast for different topics. If you want to jump around or want to find the area of the interview that's most useful for you, you can find that on the website. So without further ado, here's Jay Border. Well, thanks for connecting with me. And just to, I guess, kick stuff off, I'd love to learn about, just for context, where you grew up and kind of what brought you to the Navy and the Naval Academy.
Yeah, Justin, well, thanks for having me. You know, I grew up in South Florida, and so I grew up right on the water, and I think that that was always an aspect of my life, and have always tried to incorporate, you know, that into what I see going forward. I always want to be near the beach, and so when I was going through the college decision process, I think the Naval Academy just spoke to me. It also helped that earlier on in, you know, high school, I had thought about, you know, jobs and government service. I had looked at FBI and DEA and, you know, CIA and things like that, and they always had talked about military background being a plus. And so when it came to that job hunt, that college career search, I realized that the academies, the service academies, offered an opportunity that were not only just, you know, top-flight schools, but also had that military component to it. And I figured that this was a great way for me to kind of kickstart that career if that's really what I wanted to do in the long run.
Mm. And then when you were at the Naval Academy, it looks like you studied international relations and national security. What did you end up doing post-Naval Academy?
Yeah, so, you know, it was a real, like, political science degree in the political science department. And so a lot of it was just, you know, big picture strategy, geopolitical risk, and those types of things. And, you know, I think that's a really big component of just being a military officer, working on staff and things like that as well. So I started off as an aviation to be a pilot coming out of the academy. And unfortunately, I was medically disqualified about a year in. And I was offered an opportunity. And having known what I wanted to do, I always thought the intelligence community was extremely interesting and intriguing. And so I asked for an opportunity to lateral transfer, and I was given that opportunity. And so about a year into you know, my military career as an officer, I transitioned into the intel community. And ever since then, that's what I've been. I've been an intel officer with the Navy.
Yeah, I bet it sounds like turning lemons into lemonade. I'm sure it was disappointing to not be able to pursue being a pilot, but then being able to transition into something that really suited your background, I guess makes the best of a worse situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the reality is, I think in the military, you know, whatever component you work for, whatever branch you're part of, or whatever service you're part of, I think they all have, you know, pros and cons. And so it's just a matter of finding that positive for you and for what you want to do in the long run.
And I'm curious, at what point in your military service you realized that you wanted to transition out of active duty, and how you approached that decision?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a really difficult decision for a lot of people. I know there's some people that's real clear cut, you know, at 5 years they're ready to get out, but for me, I was at the 10-year mark, and so kind of that halfway point of deciding, you know, what should I do? Do I want to stay for another 10 and get the pension and the career, or do I want to transition off to something else? And for background on me, I was married about a year prior to that. I got married, but I had been with my fiance at the time for several years, and then we were planning to have a kid. And the career I had had enjoyed to that point, one. A lot of travel, a lot of deployment, things that on a personal and professional level I truly enjoyed. But as I took a step back and really looked at, you know, the macro perspective of what do I want out of my family, what do I want out of, you know, my relationship, you know, I realized that that deployment lifestyle was just going to be something I didn't feel like putting my family through on a regular enough basis. You know, it was really tough when my wife and I went through our first deployment because she hadn't grown up in a military family. And so really just taking that kind of optic and saying, okay, this is not something I want for my family was kind of the decision point for me. And it's different for everyone. But it also had to do with my wife's career. My wife has a professional career. And in order for me to continue to promote, to continue to be successful in what I was doing, there was going to be a lot of, I was going to be asked to go overseas for an overseas assignment. And my wife's career wasn't going to support that. And I didn't feel like it was fair on her end to ask her to quit her job for my job. And so that's really kind of what helped me make my decision.
Yeah, I can imagine having done the intelligence work with special operations, I imagine that would be really exhilarating, and the travel and all of the intrigue that you do in that job must have been very energizing. And I can also imagine that as you get older and as you start to think about a family, those things become, there's probably still the draw to do them, but the priority in your life probably drops down as you start to think about establishing your own family. And my reasons for leaving submarines was pretty similar. I wasn't married at the time, but as I thought ahead of wanting to build a family and what I wanted my family to look like, it was a similar process of saying, look, this is probably not best aligned for what I want for my future. And, you know, then it made that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I think it's a family dependent, consideration. And, you know, I think there are, plenty of, military families, with spouses who can tolerate it or who have it, in their blood and understand it. And, you know, it's just, I think it's really a personal decision, that everyone has to confront at some point in their career.
And, I'm wondering, you know, as you approach that separation point, how you look at reserves or how you consider whether or not to continue with the reserves?
Yeah, that's a great question. At this point, I am keeping the reserves as an open option simply because, like I said, I truly do enjoy what I do, and I enjoy the, you know, the reach that it has. You know, it's a very strategic look at the world. It's a very strategic job to advise commanders and senior policymakers, and I really do truly appreciate that aspect of the career. And there's also just a sense of pride and, you know, I guess obligation to service that I feel remains. And, you know, not to say that you can't get that in your next career, but for me right now, it's definitely an option I'm going to keep open so that I'm sure in my career transition that I'm comfortable where I'm at, I'm happy where I've landed. I think it also offers the opportunity that, you know, if the call comes back to me and I decide that, hey, I really, you know, I was better off back in the military, it's a little bit easier, I think, to reactivate if you're a reservist. And I've seen people who have done that, who have jumped out, gone to reserves, and actually came right back in. Mm. So, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that's me, but having the option to do that, I think, is pretty nice.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice way to keep the options open and also avoid going cold turkey. You're able to keep that part of your life alive that enjoys the patriotic side of military service and the community with the military community. And so it seems like a nice way to keep that going as you go through some pretty big transitions to life in the civilian world.
Yeah, and to add on to that too, I think that if you have a clearance, a security clearance, I think it's one way for you to maintain currency with your clearance without significant, like I would say too much of a significant commitment. It's still a significant commitment, but it's one of those things too that if you feel that, hey, in the future my clearance may be a value add for what I'm doing, it's a way to maintain some relevancy with that for a while as well.
Mm, that's great. And one of the reasons I was really excited to connect with you is you're doing Anderson's or UCLA's Anderson School of Business's executive MBA program while you're still on active duty. And there's a lot I'd like to dive in to about that. But just as a starting point, when you were starting to look at doing grad school while still on active duty, how did you consider business school versus focusing on another discipline or law school or med school or the other options you had available? Why did business school jump out to you?
Yeah, I think I was driven mostly just because of the results of conversations I had with my colleagues and people who had gone before me in doing the same thing. And I think that's just a really critical component of anyone who's making a significant transition is being able to network and ask the appropriate questions so that you can gauge other people's experiences. So for me, I had classmates and military colleagues who had gotten out and had done this before me, so I wasn't unique, in my group of colleagues. And so I had friends who had gone off to law school. I'd had friends who had gone off to business school. I had had friends who had gone off to like Georgetown School of Foreign Service to go get a national policy or national security degree. And, you know, so I think I had the benefit of enjoying their experiences and their thought process and asking them about, you know, what's the value out of your program or what's the value out of this to your career ambition, and seeing where the marriage was between what I wanted out of my life and career and what they had said they chose their path for. Medical wasn't just wasn't for me. I wasn't going to be a doctor, so I kind of scratched that one off. But I was still interested in things like the Georgetown School of Foreign Service, and so I took a hard look at that school. I always thought I would be, I would enjoy being a lawyer. But I talked to some people who had gone to law school about, you know, what are your career ambitions? What does it look like on the other side of law school? And it just wasn't really marrying up to what I felt like I wanted to do. Whereas business school was a little bit more, I would say a little bit more generic because it applies to every aspect of business. And so it gives you a little bit more of a well-rounded education in that regard versus just medical, just law, just foreign policy. But also, I think the business school angle was something that, for as a military officer, especially as an academy grad, where my entire undergrad was military, you know, I think coming out of that, it gives you the business angle, which we just simply don't get in the military. You know, there's aspects of finance and aspects of, you know, operations that you don't see from the military angle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that my experience with business school was just filling in a lot of blind spots that from 5 years in the military and 4 years of the academy, just not, it wasn't a priority to learn about these different industries. And the nice thing with the business school format where you're learning so much from your fellow classmates is you have people with those backgrounds where in a very tangible, three-dimensional way, you can put faces and stories to investment banking, private equity, consulting, consumer packaged goods, all these different things I'd never even heard of. It was a way of very rapidly getting up to speed on what options were available out there, which I found really helpful coming out of the military.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head too, talking about your classmates. I think that was a component that all of my friends who had gone to business schools, each of them stressed individually, was the value of building a non-military, more diverse network, and how business school helped you do that rapidly. Mm.
What I love from your story too is it sounds like you started to do that pretty proactively before making the decision to go to business school, of just asking around other people in similar situations, learning what they did, learning what they liked about it. And that's one of the intents with this podcast is to try and tap into that and have us learn as a military community from other people. And it seems like, you know, from your experience and from my experience as well, that continues at grad school and beyond, of just continuing to establish those connections, being able to learn from other people and how valuable that network is, not just from a learning standpoint, but also from you know, an intro perspective or getting a foot in the door for jobs. And just it makes a big difference to have that wide network you can call on. And it's definitely an advantage of business school of just immediately being able to have access to a broader network.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't echo that sentiment any stronger. I think most people will even tell you that the biggest value add of an MBA isn't necessarily the education. The education is great, but I think the biggest value add is the access to the network and the ability to quickly have friends that are in a variety of industries just across the board.
And it seems like the next decision tree, once you decided on business school, was whether you're going to go to a traditional full-time program, which I'm assuming would have to be once you got out of the military, or you would incur more time with the military, or the second option would be to do the executive MBA program, so you'd be doing classes on top of your normal workload and kind of on nights and weekends. And I'm wondering, how did you evaluate that decision? What did you see as the pros and cons of each way?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, it goes back to asking people their experiences. So some of my friends had gone on to do executive programs. Some of my friends had just gone cold turkey and gone into the two-year full-time program. And I think as you talk to them about their experiences and why they chose one or the other, you'll start to hear different things. And I'll kind of go through some of those as far as how I did my calculus. But ultimately, it's going to come down to what your personal situation is and how you are going to balance everything. So a little bit about me. Like I said, I had gotten married. My wife and I had a kid. And so we knew that we needed income to come in the door so that we could maintain the lifestyle that we had come accustomed to and that we wanted to maintain. And so for me, the value out of doing the executive program is that I got to stay in a job and keep having a salary come in the door. But more importantly, I think for me was I hadn't fully committed to getting out of the military when I started the program. I was still in love with what I did, and honestly, I still am. But, you know, it was, you know, I was kind of in this exploratory phase of, am I sure I want to get out, or is it possible I want to stay in? Because I was half, like I said, halfway through the career. And so there was kind of this decision point just within the career of being a military officer that I was at as well. And so this was a way for me to get the education, get access to the network, be able to explore without having to fully cut off what I considered a valuable career opportunity as well. And I think that was a significant plus for me. On the flip side of that, you know, there's people like some of my classmates who had decided, look, that time in the military is in my past. I'm fully ready to jump ship, and I'm fully ready to commit to this career transition. And so what they wanted to do was spend as much time as they could on campus, taking additional electives, you know, going into various networking events and exploring their career opportunities deeply, and also giving themselves the ability to have internships, which would help color their resume or recolor their resume for a successful transition. And I think that's a con to, say, the executive MBA program, if you're, like me, transitioning, is that I had no time in my schedule to take a three-month unpaid internship or even a three-month paid internship, you know, for that matter. And so there are some trade-offs, and you have to figure out what's more important in your life. Is it having the job and the career and the income, or is it having the opportunity to, you know, do the networking events, you know, that are going to happen at Wednesday at noon on campus, or the internship opportunities?
Yeah, it's I think that's really well put. It's funny though, because so I enjoyed doing a full-time MBA program, and like you said, you know, one of the downsides there is the 2 years where I'm not making any money and just spending quite a bit. That's one downside of the full-time program. And as you were saying that about, you know, with the executive MBA program, how you might not have had the extra time to pursue the extracurricular things, I think that that's valid. But there's a more cynical part of me that feels like a lot of the extracurricular stuff that you probably had to force out just based on time constraints was when I was out drinking till 2 a.m. at crazy, you know, business school parties, which was a lot of fun. And in the grand scheme of things, you know, I think in general, especially military people, we tend to work well with less time. And when we really have to focus and prioritize, I think that's where we really excel. And so I imagine a lot of the fat that you trimmed out was just that. It was unnecessary fat that probably builds some social connections and social bonds, but isn't crucial to the experience. And instead, you know, you're getting the meat of it, which is the class and the interaction with classmates and learning. And so it might not have been as big of a sacrifice as one would expect.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, there's also, you have to consider too, what your tolerance is for the format, right? I think in the executive MBA format, it's going to be something on the order. Like, so I'll just talk about Anderson.
That's exactly what I was going to ask about next. I'd love to learn about, like, what is that day-to-day and week-to-week life like for you?
Yeah, so at Anderson, the executive MBA, it's every other weekend. So for me, it was a full Friday and Saturday. They've since kind of jiggered with the program a little bit. But for the most part, it's every other weekend, full days. And you have two courses, like, really condensed into a quick quarter, right? And so that can be challenging for some because, I mean, those are exhausting days when you're in a classroom, you know, from 8 a.m. till 5 or 6 p.m., kind of nonstop with, like, a lunch break in between. You know, that can be pretty exhausting versus, I think, with the full-time program, you know, you space courses out, maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday for an hour and a half rather than 4 hours, you know, that type of thing. So it's just a little bit of a different formatting as well. So for me, you know, every other weekend and then those weeks in between, you're doing individual assignments, you're working on group assignments, you're having conference calls with your study groups. And so you have to really figure out where in your kind of time bandwidth do you have the ability to plug these events in while still not dropping the other important balls of your life. For example, your family, your full-time job, anything else you may have on the side.
Man, it sounds like an intense 2 years of just, because I'm just picturing you must be going some days you're going straight from work or you're heading right up to UCLA and you're just not having much of a break for personal time and just kind of time to unwind. It's kind of from work to school to family to work. It's just this constant cycle. So my hat's off to you for being able to juggle that as a schedule.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, it's one of those things I think we all in the military, I think we're all good at time management, but I would argue that I think doing an MBA program or the executive MBA program in particular while you're working full-time, it helps you become a professional time manager, and you really quickly learn how to triage what's critical to your day and what's not. I was saying earlier, you know, I think there's 2 years where I didn't watch a movie or like a TV series, you know, and that's something I really enjoy in my life. So, you know, you start to quickly learn, hey, that's not as critical as me getting through the day with my family.
Mm. You know, that I was going to ask this later, but just since you bring this up, I'm always curious to hear the perspective of at this point, in what ways has your military background most benefited you in grad school? And where have you found that you've been behind? Like, where have you most needed to catch up because of your military background?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think the part where the military personnel and veterans do well in the MBA programs is I think that we're all accustomed to, what's the best way to say it? Kind of this 80% solution concept, right? Of hey, it doesn't have to be perfect, it has to be good enough. And I think we're all very good at making quick decisions, gut decisions, and I think our instincts are pretty good about what's needed to successfully get a project, you know, all the way through. I think backwards planning is something that military brings to the table as far as, hey, the deliverable is due on this day. What are the 10 critical decision points we have to make between now and then, and how do we get there in this time frame that we're given? I think, you know, in the MBA programs, it's a lot of small team study group type stuff. So I think there's some small unit leadership skills that come in there as well. But it's so much different than the military because these people aren't your subordinate. They're not your team and you're not in charge, right? It's very much a peer leadership, you know, or leadership through influence, right, rather than authority. And so I think that's one thing that we have to be careful about. about is not pushing too hard on the leadership, but also knowing that we're comfortable in those zones and bringing out the best of it. Your other question was about the challenges. I think the challenge for me was getting down to, you know, tactical business understanding. So I focused on finance in my program, so I got a certificate in finance, which just means I took a lot of electives in the finance space of Anderson. And I chose that intentionally because that was an area that I was extremely weak, not because I don't understand finance, but because I've never had exposure to it. And it's very quantitative heavy. There's a lot of terminology that you've just never been exposed to. You know, there's debits and credits, there's balance sheets and income statements and statements of cash flow, you know, and all these different financial documents that are really the core of businesses. And if you don't understand how to read those and you don't understand how they interact, you can do yourself a disservice if you think you're going to get to the C-suite of a firm. And so for me, it was, I felt like I had a shorter on-ramp, and I had to go really fast to get up it. Because there are people who come in who are professional accountants, or there are people who are the CFOs of their companies, or people who are the controllers of their companies. And so you're trying to keep up with them, and honestly, it's a whole other language. And I think that, for me, was the biggest challenge.
I like that. I like the way you lay that out. And I know it's when we had spoken previously, too, you know, this concept of message to Garcia that gets drilled into you at the Naval Academy and in the military of just figuring things out. I think that that's a really good advantage and a good strength that, you know, when you talk about that weakness, which I do agree with, like trying to catch up on the tactical side of business, it does help that ability to just dig deep and break through walls and figure things out and rapidly learn a new language or a new skill set. And I think that for me, and it sounds like for you as well, was helpful at compensating for one of the weaknesses of having a military background, which is you just don't have that exposure to financials and you know, that times, you know, 100 of different tiny aspects that we don't know about from the business world. And, you know, in as an advantage of that ability to learn quickly, I think is quickly offset. So I like the way you explain that.
Yeah, I mean, the learning quickly aspect is really true. I mean, most of us have transitioned jobs, you know, a handful of times, and most of us have had to learn our new jobs, you know, in a matter of days, if not, you know, hours, right? And so it's not, I think we all know what questions to ask and how to ask them. I think the other thing you need to keep in mind is you have to be humble, and you have to be able to say to yourself, I'm not good at this, and seek out someone who can help you. Because you're going to have those people in your class who are rock stars at specific areas that you're just honestly not good at. And so you have to be able to say, hey, look, would you mind spending a few minutes with me so that I can understand the concepts? And, you know, I think a lot of us sometimes you want to be able to do things on our own. The message of Garcia is super critical, but you also can't do 100% of everything on your own in business school. You have to rely on your teammate for that support as well.
I definitely agree with that. And, you know, we talked about your decision to go to business school and your decision to do the executive MBA path. How did you specifically choose UCLA? Like, what other types of programs were you considering, and what set Anderson apart for you?
Yeah, so, like I said, I chose business school, and I chose the executive MBA route for the, you know, reasons we talked about already. But then for me, I was living in Orange County. I was living in Southern California. So, I wanted a school that was going to be a differentiator as it came to my resume. You know, I'd gotten some advice from a handful of people who said, look, you don't want to go too far down the ranking list because after a while they all start to blend together and the names just aren't recognizable to hirers, potential hirers. And so I wanted a name that was going to have some weight to it. And Anderson fit that list for me. I was looking in kind of the top 20, top 25 programs. That was just my target set. And I applied to two schools. I applied to a private school, and I applied to Anderson. And they were both in California. They both had executive MBA programs. The private school was ranked higher than Anderson, candidly. And it was kind of my dream school, right? I that was the one where I was like, hey, if I get into that, that's a home run kind of thing. But the more I went through that process, the more I started to learn about what it meant to choose your school as far as how you could finance it. And I knew I was using the GI Bill. I had 100% funding with the GI Bill because of my time in service. And so I started to look at it. And when you weigh these options, I think it's really critical for you to think about, or for anyone to think about, how are you going to finance this in the long run? And what does that mean for you as you transition out of the military, if you are transitioning out of the military? And so Anderson, because it's a public school, the GI Bill covers 100% of the tuition, the books, and I think I ended up paying out of pocket just for like my parking pass and a couple of hotel stays I had on the weekends that I was up there. But really, for the most part, my MBA was free. On the flip side, the private school that I looked at, I should say this about Anderson, too, is it didn't take up 100% of my 36 months of funding. I think it only took about 20 of those months out of the whole available GI Bill. So right now, I still have GI Bill funding available that I can go and get a second master's degree or professional licensing or something to help support my career transition. On the flip side, the private school, the way it was formatted, it was going to end up taking all of the GI Bill funding, 100% of it. And then because it was a private school and I was active duty, I didn't qualify for this additional program called the Yellow Ribbon, which is like a school matching program, but I wouldn't have qualified for that. So, it only would have paid a portion of the tuition. And when all was said and done, it was going to be about another $100,000 out of pocket for the tuition, plus the $30,000 it would have taken for me to pay for flights to travel, because this school is up in San Francisco. It was going to take me another $30,000-$35,000 over the course of 2 years to have flights back and forth, as well as hotels, to stay there for the weekends that class was available. The other aspect of it for me was Anderson was driving distance, and I knew that if something happened, you know, with my family on the weekend or whatever, I wanted to have the ability to jump in my car and come back and take care of the family. So, there was some proximity issue as well, that played into my decision making.
I mean, that financial difference is unbelievable, and I don't think I understood prior to going to grad school how significant that cost is, especially for people who have gone to a service academy and didn't have that burden of an undergrad loan. Walking into that, the costs are considerable, and you're talking about $100,000+. It's a tremendous amount of money. And so what I really respect about the path that you've forged here is not just the time efficiency of making sacrifices while on active duty to save yourself the 2 years afterwards of going to grad school full time, but also that efficiency in how you're using your money and how you're saving money with that. I think it's a very smart play that will pay off in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you've been through business school, do you understand this? I mean, there's a ton of value of money that goes into it. If you think about, you know, the 2 years of salary plus the delta between the two schools of what it would have cost, I mean, the choice to go to Anderson for me was significant. So, I should say the executive program at Anderson was significant.
Awesome. And the kind of final set of things I'd love to talk about is I know that you're in the process of making this transition. And so it's interesting to hear from the front lines of someone who's just starting to evaluate career possibilities. And I wonder any advice you have or any lessons learned or just any thoughts on how that process is going so far.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us come in, you know, or come out of the military, and I think you've been reassured all the time of, hey, look, your experience in the military is highly valued. It's really important out in corporate America. They need corporate leaders who can come in and take charge and do things. And I believe that that's true. I really do. But I also believe that the transition is not as easy as people want you to believe, because it is a lot of work, and it's a full-time job to set yourself up for success into a successful transition. You know, there's, I think, with just like with the decision on which school to go to and which avenue to pursue, I think it all comes down to networking. I think you really have to be diligent about expanding your network and leveraging your network to your advantage as far as asking the right questions, learning the ins and outs of specific industries and specific job Silicon Valley. That sounds super cool because that's the new cutting edge thing. But also, there's really cool things going on in healthcare, and it's a turbulent industry right now with the regulatory policies that are going on. That sounds cool. I thought that finance and investment banking sounded great. I like the idea of management consulting. You know, and so what ends up happening is you've got kind of all these doors open, and I think we're afraid to, say, close the door because we don't want to miss out on what could be a very lucrative opportunity. But the problem with that, I think, strategy and that methodology is that you don't give yourself the ability to focus. And if you don't have the focus on a more narrow set of options, then you really can't refine your story, especially if all you have is the military background. It's tough for you to develop a cohesive story that makes sense to people as you do informational interviews and as you network. And so what ended up happening for me is that, you know, as I was drafting my kind of professional resume, I was putting in bullets that showed, you know, how I could be successful at sales. And I was putting in bullets about how I could be successful at kind of technology and innovation. And I was putting in bullets about, you know, how I could be good at management consulting and strategy and these types of roles. But the reality is that when you do that, and a potential employer or someone in your network is reviewing your resume is just kind of all over the map, and it doesn't really make sense, and it's hard for them to, in their mind, envision where you would fit, because they're like, is it healthcare, is it technology, is it sales, is it consulting, where do I plug this guy, or girl? And so you have to do yourself, I think, some favors in that. Exploring is not a problem. You need to explore, especially if you were like me and don't know what you want to do. But you also have to start aggressively making decisions about, I think, closing some doors, not such in a bad way, but in a way that's going to kind of promote your forward progress. I hope that makes sense.
Oh, man, I could not agree more with what you're saying. And two things that came to mind for me. One was when I was at Stanford, the Career Management Center, a guy named Andy Chan, who was running their program, had just said early on, and it stuck with me, of, you know, don't focus on finding out what you want to do. Figure out what you don't want to do. And to your point, just start slamming those doors shut. Start getting a taste, whether it's through interviews, whether it's through maybe taking one day and just volunteering at a different job to get a sense of what it looks like. If you have the opportunity to spend a week or 2 weeks of vacation, just, you know, again, volunteer to get your foot in the door for free and just get a sense of what does the day-to-day look like. But start slamming those doors shut and start realizing what you don't want. Because, you know, to your point, there is a tremendous opportunity cost, and that makes me think of the second point, which was, you know, early on in business school for me, it's we started in like September, and in January is when we started interviewing for our summer internship, so not a lot of time. And I remember it feels like you're a kid in the candy store. You've got so many different potential options of what to do, and so there's that urge to want to try and do more. And exactly like you said, everything from how you specifically tailor your resume, how you tell your stories, how you're able to research every single firm that you're applying to. And I had originally thought of doing consulting and investment banking, and realized that even early on, those two industries was too much to do well. And so ditched investment banking and focused solely on consulting, and was able to land a great internship with McKinsey. But it was only possible because, like you said, I closed those doors. And so, you know, I'm emphatically agreeing with what you're saying. It's very, very hard to do, but to have that discipline to and not be afraid of closing doors. Not you know, nothing's ever permanent, but you just have so much to gain by saying no to things and really narrowing that focus to something very, very minute.
Yeah, and you know, as you do it, it's going to help you figure out exactly what you want to do, because the people that you'll network with and the people you'll take informational interviews with are more empowered than at that point to help guide you, because you've got a more narrow focus and it makes sense. They can help you draw what the traditional path would be to get to the ones that you're still open to. Versus, you know, if you're all over the board and someone has no experience with all of those different options, it's really tough to give you good kind of tactical advice going forward.
That's great. I know we only have a little bit of time left here, but you know, one thing that you mentioned to me previously, and I know you've touched on this briefly, but I'd like your thoughts on, I forget your words, but it was the sense of using advisors and mentors to help you in this transition. And you've spoken about this in terms of figuring out which school to go to and things like that. But any other thoughts on how you've gone about establishing this council of people to give you perspective and wisdom in the process?
Yeah, I think it starts off with your network, you know, and I mean, there's plenty of books and there's plenty of advice out there on building networks and how you do it. But I think the reality is it often goes unheeded until you need it. And when you need it, it's often too late to build it, right? And so I think networking needs to be a very proactive process, and it needs to be a very has to be an ongoing process and a living process that you have just kind of in your day to day. I think a lot of us in the military, and this is actually true of most industries, I think people kind of get stuck in their industry, and what ends up happening is they build a network that's pretty strong in their industry, but if they're looking to transition industries, they look up one day and realize, you know what, I don't know a whole lot of people in, say, healthcare or in technology or whatever. So for me, I mean, 10 years in, I looked up and I was ready to transition, and I realized all the people I trusted, all the people whose advice I would seek out, all the people I had gone to undergrad with, because it was Naval Academy, were all military, right? Or had maybe just freshly transitioned. And so those were the people I started to cherry pick, were the freshly transitioned ones. But at the same time, I realized my network wasn't strong enough for me to get a good kind of 360-degree review of what I wanted to do. And so I had to be very diligent about saying, I want to build people in this space, and I want to build people in this space, and I want to have friends I can call on in this space. And so you start to ask for introductions, ask your friends, you ask your family, you know, and that's how you start off. But then you, from there, it's all about how you network and how you build positive relationships going forward. And then the other piece of advice I think out of this is the value of mentors. You know, not a network, so not like a colleague or a friend that you can call on, but actual mentors, people who have done this, seen it, and seen it from multiple angles, who can offer really strategic advice to you, people who can look at your resume and say, you know what, there's opportunities in this industry that you haven't thought about or you haven't even explored yet that would be a good fit for your background. And for me, I got this piece of advice from business school, but I continue to use it, is kind of developing your own personal board of advisors. And so in my case, I look at that, there's five or six individuals who are more senior than me. You know, most of them are in their late career, looking to retire, maybe have even just recently retired from the few job opportunities I'm looking at, and asking them about their advice, asking them, how would you position if you were me, and who would you talk to, and where would you go? Because those people are the ones who have the deep network. Those are the people who, if you do it correctly, can reach in and ask for favors from hiring managers and placement agents and things like that, who can help you guide that career transition. Mm. And I think that's really important for us. You know, I think in the military, you can have a career mentor. You know, if you were a pilot, your CO, maybe a career mentor, your XO, or your former op. You know, and those are great if you're staying in the military. But I think just as valuable as that, those individuals, I think you need someone on the outside who can talk to you about career opportunities outside of the military.
Yeah, I mean, I think that applies not just to the job search. I know for entrepreneurship, it's very true of just constantly reaching out, borrowing expertise, not reinventing the wheel, but finding people who have knowledge that we don't to help fill in those gaps. And, you know, literally everything I've ever done in entrepreneurship, it's involved some part of finding someone who has that domain expertise and who can help jumpstart my learning process so I'm not learning from scratch. And, you know, I like your process on this, because I think that it can be intimidating to reach out to people and to ask for help in that way. But most people are very willing, or if not, you just you reach out to a lot of people and eventually someone caves. But it makes a tremendous difference. And I love that thought that you said of a personal board of advisors. I think that's a great approach.
Yeah, and it's got to be like a group of people too that you come back to. Say, hey, look, I tried this advice and either it worked for me or it didn't work for me. How do I retweak it? How do I retool it to get back out there? And, you know, I think for a lot of transitioning veterans, we're really kind of, you gotta get the rust off the wheels.
Yep. And are there any resources you would recommend if someone's still on active duty, any book or any online quiz to help you figure out what you'd be interested in, or anything that you can remember specifically that helped you as you were thinking about this transition? Awesome. Well, this has been really helpful. I appreciate your time on this and your perspective. And I know you're in the process of transitioning still, and so I'm wishing you luck on it. But based on everything you're saying, I think you're approaching it in a way that's going to lead to a lot of success.
Well, thanks, Justin. And I'm happy to speak with you. And you know, keep doing what you're doing. We're, you know, all of us appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thank you. That's all for today. A couple quick admin items. If you have recommendations on how to make the show better or more usable for active duty military personnel, please drop me a line at beyondtheuniform.io. Also, as a reminder, anything that we discuss on the call, if there's a relevant link, I'll post that in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io. And we'll be back next week with more interviews. Have a great week.